From the Hope 205 Studios, a Joe Louville Productions studio venture.
Imagine a workplace where leaders focus on empowering their teams, where the growth and well-being of people are at the heart of every decision. This isn't a distant dream. This is Activating Hope.
With the ease of digital communication at anyone's fingertips and many professionals transitioning to work from home, the way an individual communicates online is more important than ever before. In this episode of Activating Hope, we'll discuss with keynote speaker and communication coach, Dr. Ali Atkinson, her latest guide for personal success. How's your computer side manner? The 9 digital mistakes you're making that are holding you back. It explains how to blend one's in-person self with their digital self in order to put their best foot forward in an ever-changing digital landscape. Dr. Ali Atkinson is a highly regarded learning and development strategist, facilitator, and keynote speaker who has educated and inspired teams and audiences of all sizes for more than 2 decades. With more than 20 years in the learning field, Ali is widely considered one of the foremost authorities on how the adult brain learns. She is also the author of recently released game-changing book, How's Your Computer Side Manner? 9 Digital Communication Mistakes You're Making That Are Holding You Back. Ali uses her wealth of experience in learning and development, communication, and leadership to build innovative learning programs. And she delights in delivering clear, tangible, and yes, actually fun programs and workshops to engage with organizations and teams who want to truly achieve lasting results. Ali brings expertise in learning and development, professional speaking, facilitation, strategic planning, leadership, and team building. She uses her experience with the power of communication and science to deliver results that marry the complex interplay between human motivation and the organization's values and missions. We'd like to welcome Ali to this episode of Activating Hope. I would like to welcome Dr. Ali Atkinson to our show today. Super excited to have her joining us to talk about multiple things around communication. And I have to tell you, Ali, I have in my hand right here your How's Your Computer Side Manner book. And I want to tell you that as I was going through and reading this, I have made just about every mistake 1 through 9. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I do these things. So I just was like, I cannot wait to talk with you so maybe I can get better at all that, because we'll jump in and talk about a lot of things, communication, and also you're a learning and development strategy expert, so much expertise that you have. But this, you know, what this book provides, and we'll talk about how that connects to also what you do, is that in this world of digital communication, do you think we've become better or worse at some of this? And I think worse, because these mistakes made, I just feel like, did we make these a long time ago? Or is this just something you're seeing, again, in this age of digital communication?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm so pleased to hear that my book resonated with you. And, I guess that without starting with what probably sounds like a humble brag, I do get that feedback a lot, and which is exactly what inspired me to write the book to begin with, because as someone who has studied and frankly just been truly passionate about communication skills my entire adult life in terms of studying, I see these mistakes, and most of them people seem to be really unaware that they're making. But the problem is that the impact of these digital communication mistakes, of course, is real, and it is typically felt by the people that they work with, the people they interact with. So the impact on their personal and professional brand is real. And I just hate to see that. I want to be able to help people build a stronger personal and professional brand by having better communication skills. So just kind of opening people's eyes to some communication mistakes you may be making that you're not aware of. And the good news, and I think you saw from my book, is that most of the strategies themselves are, not rocket science, right? It's really just about awareness about what you're doing so that you can, of course, do better. When we know better, we do better, right?
Yes.
Your question about are we better or worse in terms of some of these mistakes now, I would agree with you. I think I hesitate to characterize it as worse because, you know, there's no value judgment there for me anyway. But are they happening more frequently? Most certainly. That is, in by and large, not necessarily, it's certainly not usually, oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, purposeful mm-hmm. on anyone's part. The truth is, and I'm sure you hope experience this just like I do. All of my clients tell me this so frequently. We are all pulled in so many directions nowadays. And although all of the virtual world, you know, the internet and the various ways we have to communicate with each other offer us a lot of opportunity and, you know, some really great you know, information and relationships and connections that we did not have access to, you know, frankly, even 10 years ago, much less 20, 30 years ago. At the same time, what they do is there are more things competing for our attention. Mm-hmm. And we tend to have the, frankly, misguided perception that our communication is the one thing that doesn't matter, that we can let lapse and don't have to pay you know, as much attention to. There are some good colleagues of mine wrote a book that I also really love, where they coined this term called digital pollution to talk about this idea that, you know, we're all sort of, you know, obviously equated to air pollution, is that we're all sort of filling the airwaves with a lot of digital pollution when we don't give our communication more thought about the way that it is landing on other people. And so I kind of added to that and said, you know, for me, I think if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the pollution.
You're part of
the
pollution.
And that's exactly what I hope to mitigate with my book.
Well, and I just will tell you that I, you know, I say this a lot in leadership development is common sense isn't always common practice. Mm-hmm. And, as you read these things, you're like, I should be doing these things, or why am I not doing these things? I just find that everybody is in such a hurry. Like, everybody's busy.
Yeah.
And it just seems like we become busy with our communication. You know, I need to quickly communicate something to someone and I hope that they can decode it. I hope that they just get it. You know, why would they not get it? Why would they not know what my intent was? But I think, you know, in this world, especially of digital communication and Zoom and, you know, so much so since COVID, I think that that's, you know, a lot of etiquette has just gone by the wayside of how we're getting and communicating because we're not face to face anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's so much that can get lost in translation. That
Absolutely.
We do, you know, that intentionality becomes just extremely, extremely important.
Well, 100%. Yeah. It's not something, you know, good communication, it's like a good relationship. It's not something that happens by accident, right? It takes a little bit of work. It takes a little bit of effort and it takes consistent practice. You know, I often liken it to, you know, if your fitness and your physique, right? If you have a goal, say to have a particular physique, you know, maybe 6-pack abs or something, you can work really hard to get those 6-pack abs. But once you get them, you don't get to say, oh, good, I finally have that 6-pack. Now I can start eating Krispy Kreme every day, right? It's like, it still takes work and effort and, you know, consistency.
It does. It does. And I don't think a lot of people think about that when they think about communication. But, you know, I have a statistic I share in a workshop I do on being a proactive communicator, and it's 87% of problems are caused by some form of miscommunication.
Yep. Where, I know that statistic. In fact, I've shared it as well.
It's very powerful. And, you know, I would love to know the 13% that gets through and is effective.
Right.
It's like,
right.
What's the best practice on that? What's the best practice? Well, so in addition to being this communication expert and having written this How's Your Computer Side Manner, you also have expertise in learning and development strategy. Mm-hmm. And so how do these areas intersect for you and how do they intersect for your clients as well?
Yeah, great question. I'd love to give a little bit of brief background, if I may, because it explains how they intersect, how they began to intersect for me. So prior to my current role as VP of Learning and Development for HRD in Indianapolis, I spent my entire adult career in the academic world. I was an associate professor of communication at the University of Denver and an associate dean there for the College for Professional Studies. And so when I initially began teaching 100 years ago, you know, we didn't really learn back in the day how to be good teachers, right? We were hired to be subject matter experts and then you know, sort of given your room and your the key to your room in the book and said, you know, good luck. And very early on, it became important to me to be a good teacher. If I was going to do this, I wanted to do it well. And I remember thinking one day that I just wasn't comfortable with the approach I had been taking, which was kind of that old sage on the stage model. I'm just going to stand up here and lecture at you for 2 hours and, you know, hope you learn something, right? Which is, you know, fairly standard.
I call that sit and get. You're going to sit and get.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, I've got the expertise. Here it is. You know, if it works for you, great. If not, sorry. And I just didn't want that for myself. And so I started researching how the adult brain learns, really just initially in an effort to make my own teaching practice better so that I could know that if I were going to engage in teaching, that learning was taking place. And I immediately fell in love with learning about the brain. And, you know, nowadays there are a lot of people who study the brain. It wasn't quite as common back then because, like I said, this was 100 years ago. And so initially, you know, eventually I started teaching other teachers, you know, better teaching practices based on what we know about the brain. And at the same time, you know, as a doctorate in communication, I had this aha moment one day that, wow, you know, teaching and communicating are really not that different. Ultimately, it's about getting a message across clearly and accomplishing a communication goal. So I started to put that together. I started to really do more research, and that became the bulk of what my research interest was in for many years while I was at this university, that I taught and studied brain-based communication practices. Then as my job as associate dean, of course, I couldn't help but get interested in, so now how does this intersect with what good leadership looks like? So again, then started to expand my practice into leadership and learning and development and communication. For me, given that I was a professor and an associate dean, those things were all inextricably linked. I wanted to understand how learning and development intersects with, you know, with communication. And so for me, ultimately, they are absolutely interconnected. You know, both require me to consider my audience and my goals first and foremost. I think really how they intersect for my clients is that my understanding of communication affords me a little bit more insight into the impact of learning and development related decisions across all facets, right? So In other words, it's not just how the learning is carried out, but it's also how it's organized, how it's talked about in the organization, how it's applied, how the leadership of the people who are participating in any learning and development series are also talking about what's being learned and using that information. So communication and learning and development are absolutely, to me, critically linked. And I relish the opportunities to work with my clients and show them how so as well. And they always seem to appreciate it.
Well, and as you know, doing leadership coaching myself, and that it's communication, if a leader can't communicate effectively, how that limits their team. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either they communicate too much, not enough, as we've talked about, you know, they don't really think about their audience and how does their teams need to receive that? And right. So really just, you know, generally what I find, and I don't know if you find this in your work as well, a lot of leaders communicate like they like to be communicated with.
Right.
And that's great for those people who are like you, but for mm-hmm. those ones who are not, how much gets missed?
Yeah.
And, you know, how that really limits the entire, you know, not only the individual success, but it also limits the success of the entire team.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's such great insight. You're so right. And, you know, I always like to give grace where grace is due. It's not necessarily the fault of people who do that. I mean, they have the best intentions. You know, you think, well, this works for me, so hopefully it will work for other people. But of course, that's really where miscommunications come in. And it's one of the reasons that I often joke, it's a miracle two people can ever communicate effectively. When you think about all of the different perspectives and experiences and opinions and attitudes and beliefs that any two people bring to the table, because all of those things cannot help but impact the way we communicate. So, you know, to your point, so it's a challenge to put yourself in the other person's shoes first, because of course we're all beginning where we begin, right? I love a good parable. It's probably not surprising given what I do for a living, right? Like communication and learning and development. But there's a children's story called Fish's Fish. I love to share this story sometimes in some of my workshops, but maybe it It won't be quite as good on a podcast because there's an image that it helps to see, but I'll explain it. But there's a children's story called Fish's Fish, where a minnow and a tadpole are childhood friends. And the tadpole grows into a frog, of course, as tadpoles do, right? And the now frog leaves the water and goes out and experiences life on land because, you know, he's a frog and now he can do that. But he got so excited about all the things that he saw on land, you know, things like birds and cows and humans, that he really wanted to return back to the water and tell his friend the fish about all the things that he had seen on land. So he goes back to the water, tells his friend the fish about birds and cows and humans. But in the storybook, it shows a picture of the image that the fish has in his mind of the things that his friend the frog was describing. And it's basically like a cow with a fish head and a person with a fish head, right? And a bird with a fish head. And of course, the idea is, of course, that's how the fish imagines land life, because that's all the fish knows. It's never been outside the water. And I tell that story, of course, to share what you and I were just talking about, to illustrate what you and I were just talking about, that, you know, it's no one person's fault. We can't help but begin any interaction from our own perspective, from the way that we see the world. So the work is in finding that connection, whether it's to one other person that we're talking to or to a group of people. It's in finding that connection so that I can try to meet you where you are, as opposed to expecting you to come, you know, to come to me, to read my mind, as it were.
And I think that's, when we're in a leadership role, especially, I think that that's a responsibility that we have, to reach out and connect. And, you know, how can I best see the perspective and be empathetic to where this person is coming from and connect with them. And again, in such a way that we can effectively communicate. And, you know, a lot of it too, to your point, is, you know, I find a lot of leaders have never really been given feedback on, have they been effective? You know, that's why when we do coaching, I'm a huge fan of doing 360s, because it's like, check in with your team. Are you giving them what they need? Are they able to understand you? And I think a lot of times we just assume if nobody says something, we're doing fine.
Right. Right.
And that's not always the case. And I'm sure you've seen that too.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, not only that, but the whole approach of, you know, no news is good news is problematic also, because if I, you know, great if I'm not necessarily doing anything wrong, but if I don't get feedback about what I'm doing right, how do I know if you want me to repeat it? So, you know, again, it goes back to that inextricable link between communication, leadership, and learning and development. I mean, for me, it's just this, you know, triumvirate that is absolutely all connected.
I agree. Well, can you share a time with us when there was a communication misstep within an organization that led to some serious challenges in employee development and engagement? And how did you see that play out? And I'm sure this happens on such a small level. So if you could dig deep into your experiences and share a time with us about that, I think that would be an interesting point of discussion along the lines of what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course. I mean, I'm sure you hear my amusement because I've seen more of these than I can count. In a previous organization that I worked in, the organizational leadership used to hold town halls pretty frequently, you know, which when it's a big organization can be a useful tool to disseminate information, right? But the organization, unfortunately, was struggling financially. And so in one town hall, the senior most leader who was leading the town hall was, you know, kind of explaining the financial struggles that the organization was having, how we weren't really meeting our goals. And at one point he said something to the effect of, we all need to work a lot harder this year. And, you know, it's just one of those great examples. Again, it certainly did not come from a place of ill intent. It came from a place of a desire to do better. But unfortunately, it was a little bit tone deaf. And the employees, I think, heard the messages that, A, we were all to blame for the downturn, and B, that we weren't working hard enough. And so, you know, especially in a time when, like many organizations, we were all constantly being asked to do more with less, you can imagine it caused a great deal of consternation among what was, gosh, I don't even remember how many employees, hundreds, maybe thousands. So, you know, most likely, unfortunately, it contributed to the fact that the organization continues to struggle, and I happen to know is now going through layoffs. Because, you know, sometimes just that the tiniest little what's the word, tweak in a message is the difference between how it lands, right? And so just thinking really about the word choice matters. This is a good example of that.
That's I'm just sitting here thinking, wow, that was not the most motivational speech that could have been given.
Right.
I just think working on it, you know, even just thinking through that. And like you said, no real ill intent with that.
Right.
It was just a point. But how much did it set everyone back? This was supposed to be bringing people together. Come on, let's band together. Let's do better. But it got the message did not get received.
Right. Well, and I think intent is funny. You know, in the work I do, I get asked about that pretty frequently. Sometimes people will say, you know, but, you know, doesn't it matter that, isn't it enough that I didn't mean ill intent? Or, you know, they should know that I mean well. And in fact, I even talk about this in my book. And it's like, I want to honor that when people ask, because I think it comes from such a good place. And I so respect and admire that. But unfortunately, the answer is no, the intent doesn't matter on the recipient. And, you know, one of the best sort of analogies that I sometimes give is think about relationships that you have, most likely your closest relationship, maybe with your partner, maybe a parent or sibling. How often we ask people, like, you know, if, let's say you and your partner are, you know, puttering around the kitchen one night, you know, making dinner, but kind of working together, kind of in your own space, right? And one of you says, "What's wrong? Did I do something to upset you?" And you're going like, "What are you talking about? Right? I didn't do anything. I'm over here chopping broccoli." And you're like, "Well, I don't know. I thought you had I thought you made a face, or you seemed snarky when I asked you something a minute ago." Right away, you know, you're beginning with this assumption of ill intent. And my question is, if you don't know your partner well enough to assume that he or she has positive intent and start from that place with them, the person you trust most in the world, why would we, think that we're extending even more grace to our work colleagues? The truth is that we extend them less grace. And so, you know, that question of intent is so important, because I think it's, people want other people to just see their intent, but we can't, because we're not mind readers. We have only one thing to judge your intent on, and that is what you communicate.
And if you're not sure, I always say, have you talked to them about it? Because right. We're almost sure we know what the intent was. And then I'm sure you've seen how many times this ends up playing out, taking way more longer for something to happen, or someone's feelings get hurt. Nobody says anything about it. So, you know, it's going back, especially in leadership roles, and encouraging people, you know, if you hear something and you're not sure, it's like, I'm interpreting it like this. I wonder if that's what they meant. Sitting down and having a conversation about that. Like, I heard this. This is what I thought you said, or this is what I thought you mean by it. And then the person has the opportunity to go, oh my gosh, that's what you thought I meant by that? That's not at all what I meant. But how much more quickly we can clear it up if we sit down and have dialogue about it, where I just see, especially when this, you know, in this world of digital communication and emailing, when we just keep emailing back and forth about it, instead of just picking up the phone, talking about, I read it as this, is this what you meant? We keep trying to figure that out. And I've coached a lot of people on that. It's like, how long did it take you to work through that? You could have picked up the phone, and in 5 minutes, this was not even an issue anymore, because this was not what was meant by what was said.
Oh, 100%. Yes, we proceed on assumptions way too much. If I may, I want to go back to something you said a moment ago, because it's so great. This, you know, yes, and what you, I want to yes and what you said about yes, picking up the phone, clarifying, understanding is always a good thing. I'll add one thing as kind of, I think, best practice too. If you want to have a conversation, and I so encourage you to have a conversation if you're not sure you're understanding somebody's intent or meaning. And those are can be related, but two different things technically. To go to them and say, hey, you know, this is what I think I heard. Did I get it right? And that asking that second question, do I have this right? Allows them, as you said, to come in and say, oh, thank you so much for asking. No, actually you didn't get it right. That's not what I meant. But that is actually a process that Charles Duhigg talks about in a book, Super Communicators, that I also really like, called Looping for Understanding. And essentially that's it. We all know the art of paraphrasing, right? Like, hey, this is what I think I heard you say, But that actually turns out doesn't take things quite far enough when it comes to engendering both clarity and just, you know, positive relational affect, is that opportunity then to say, this is what I think I heard you say. Did I get that right?
I love the positiveness of that, mm-hmm. because it doesn't put someone on the defense, because especially if you were interpreting in such a way that you're upset about it, coming at it could almost make the other person defensive and, well, that's not what I meant, you know, and it, right. that's not where you need to take it. But I just, mm-hmm. I love that. Did I get it right? Mm-hmm. And then take the person has the opportunity to say, well, maybe you did, but you know, most yep. of the time, I think when we start heading down the path of assumptions, we get lost. Exactly. And then we're like, yes, we spend way too much time in it.
Well, and the problem with assumptions, of course, is, you know, well, there's a lot of problems with assumptions, but in this context, is that, you know, we tend to really be reacting, not even necessarily to the thing that the person said, but rather we are reacting to the story we tell ourselves about the thing the person said. And then they end up getting the brunt of our reaction to that, which can feel really unfair, of course, because, you know, like I said, we're not reacting to what they said. We're reacting to our reaction to what they said. The story,
the
right? Like,
and
oh, she doesn't think I know what I'm talking about. Or, you know, he doesn't think I care about my job. And it's like, even if that's not what they said at all, that's the narrative that you tell yourself in your head. And then that's what you actually react to. So, yeah, to, you know, frankly, in my book, I talk about this probably in more than one chapter, that I really do believe that the single most powerful tool any communicator or leader, same thing, I guess, right? All leaders are communicators, can have is the ability to lead with questions. We speak too often with certainty. We lead too often from assumption. And so just to learn to lead more often with questions, I think is the, if you took nothing else from my book or from any of my, you know, facilitation that I do with clients or coaching sessions, that's the best tool.
That is the best tool, is just, and then just listen.
Yes.
Try not to judge, just listen. I like listen to learn, not yep. listen to respond, as, you know, the good old Stephen Covey, listen to understand yep. and seek first to understand.
That's right.
And that comes from some really great questions.
That's right. Yep. Those are oldies but goodies. And
oldies, you know, but they're classic. They're, what would we say? Yep. They're communication classics.
That's right. Yep. For a reason. You know,
for a reason. For a reason. Yes.
Are you ready to activate hope and drive change? At Integrating Women Leaders Foundation, we're committed to developing leaders and enabling companies to maximize productivity. That's why we support Activating Hope, the podcast, your go-to source for leadership development and business best practices. Join us in breaking down barriers and creating equal opportunities for all. Discover programming that develops both personal and professional growth, and engage in bold conversations to address systemic challenges. Don't miss out. Learn more about how you can be part of this movement. Visit IWLFoundation.org. That's IWLFoundation.org today. Together, we can create a world where everyone has access to unlimited possibilities for success. Are you an artist struggling to bring your creative visions to life? Whether you're planning a multi-country tour, mounting a play at a local theater, or recording your first album, Before the Applause is here to guide you through every step of the way. Authored by industry experts Joe DeCenzi and Joe Hanna, this groundbreaking book offers artists the fundamentals of project management paired with leadership skills crucial to getting your artistic projects over the finish line. Unveiling Before the Applause, your ultimate guide to project management for artists.
So thinking about this world of communication, and, you know, I know, Allie, you and I both being very much submerged into the HR world, and for the HR leaders specifically out there listening, what role should they play? What role should communication play, rather, in employee development as an HR professional?
Yeah,
how do you help support that, promote that among the other leaders in the organization?
Yes, great question. Love this one. To state it quite simply, initially, it can't be underestimated. It's a really integral part of emotional intelligence, of leadership, of strategic planning, succession planning, change management, helping people lead through conflict or challenging situations. Communication is, frankly, I mean, if you think about it, communication is actually what makes the world happen. We can't do anything without it. And yet it is so frequently the cause of, you know, challenges and roadblocks, but it is also the only way very often to, you know, it's not a panacea. It doesn't solve all the world's problems, but it is often the only way to get out of those things as well. And so what tends to be problematic, and it's funny because, you know, in my world, I hear this talked about so much. I feel like we're all talking about it, but I'm not seeing the needle move as much about doing it differently, is that we tend to focus in the HR and even learning and development space a little too much on skill development and forget about that critical importance of what I call human-centric skills. I eschew the phrase soft skills because I think that's one of the reasons that people don't take them as seriously is because we refer to them as soft, right?
Soft, which, it makes it sound like, why would I care about something that's soft?
You know, right. You know,
I mean,
marshmallows should be soft, but you know, skills should not, right? And so I like to think of them as human-centered skills, but without those human-centered skills, the hard skills will get you nowhere. It's really a mistake to assume that your hard skills are all that you need. So I think where leadership sometimes misses the mark in learning and development, and you know, when I say leadership, of course, I refer to HR, but also, you know, sometimes learning and development practitioners, is assuming that the hard skills are all you need. I think what's really missing for a lot of organizations right now, and this bears out in terms of the attrition rates, the turnover rates, the number of times people are put on PIPs and have to deal with HR because they're having relational issues. That's what's missing, is that integration of both hard and human-centric skills into everyday work. I have a really what I think is a compelling example of this. Do we have time for me to share?
I would love for you to share that. Please do.
So I have a good colleague who is in the IT space, and he, this turns out it was at a company previous to the one he's at now, but he was leading a team of, I think, like 10 or 12, IT developers who, of course, you know, do the coding, right? Now, I'm not an expert on coding, so bear with me if I use any language incorrectly here, but I'll try not to.
I am not either, so you will sound right to me because I don't know.
So this colleague of mine, I'll call him Julian. So my colleague Julian had a gentleman working on his team. Let's see, what do I want to call him? I'll call him Art. I'm just making up these names, right?
Very creative. Julian and Art. That's what you're
I don't know. Yeah. It's just the first thing that came to my brain. So Julian had this guy working on his team who he told me, this guy Art was, and this is Julian's words, the most beautiful coder he had ever seen. Now, of course, not being in IT, I don't really understand the ins and outs of what makes coding look beautiful or not beautiful. So I'll have to take Julian's words on that. But, you know, I assume it's sort of like being a communicator, right? It makes sense that some people are better at the craft than other people. But turned out that Julian, even though Art was the, you know, quote, most beautiful coder he had ever seen, he had to fire him. And the reason is because all of this beautiful coding got him nowhere when it came to his ability to interact and communicate effectively about his work to the rest of the team. So what would happen was that Art would, you know, kind of go off and say, you know, if you know anything about IT developers, they do, you know, very often like to sort of work real heads down, right? Blinders on.
Very solo.
So do that, and he would do really good work. But the problem was that despite Julian's constant sort of, you know, pleading and insistence, Art would fail to communicate to the rest of the team what he was working on, why he was working on it, and where the code ended up. So what happened was that he would create these redundancies in the code where other members of the team were, you know, sometimes doing the same thing, but putting it in a different place. Well, this means that next time something gets updated, now they have to go update it in two or maybe even more places. And very often, you know, obviously, oh, the other thing that would happen that Julian told me is that they would go over time and over budget on a project because they had multiple people engaging in the same thing because they didn't know, you know, what Art was working on. So he had to give him a lot of admonishment, put him on a PIP, nothing ever changed, and he ended up losing his job. So that for me is one of the most compelling examples I've heard in a while of why we need communication skills, not just hard skills. And so I think, you know, leaders, or whether HR leaders or L&D leaders, who kind of miss that opportunity to understand that those two things are inextricably linked, I think that's where we may run into issues and, you know, wondering why we can't, quote, find good people.
Well, I agree with you. And I think also, you know, putting them as part of their accountability piece. So just like you measure their goals on, you know, did they make all their deliverables? I think this, the human-centric, which I love how you framed that, not the soft stuff, but the human-centric part of that, you know, where is that accountability for not only leaders, but for their teams? Because you look at it in the situation of art, you know, unfortunately that, you know, that did not work out. But what is the development that you help people who don't have that human-centric skill set as their best effort?
Right.
You know, they have other things, but how do we help people develop that? And, you know, you mentioned just a moment ago, the emotional intelligence piece of it. I, you know, that's what we teach. That's the world you and I are in. And I find for people that don't naturally have that, it does require a lot of intentional effort on their part to remember to say, you know, have I communicated this? Did they understand it? Do, you know, and just kind of doing that, because their thing is always, you know, they're really good at getting tasks done. But I also would argue, how really successful are you at getting tasks done if, you know, people don't completely understand what you need them to do?
Well, that's right.
And
yeah, there's a difference between getting them done effectively, efficiently, and just checking off a box. And what might you have to come back around to because the communication about that task wasn't as clear the first time, right? And yeah, you said such an important word, intentionality. I mean, that's the key. That's the key. Good. There are very few things in life that happen accidentally done well, right? They take work, they take effort. Again, you know, fitness, leadership, communication, all of these things, they take intentionality. They don't, good communication just does not happen by accident. You know, I mean, I've been studying and researching communication since I was 24 years old, and I still don't knock it out of the park every single day. You know, I still make mistakes. I still have to say, gosh, I wish I had said that better or not said that or been more intentional about, you know, thinking how this would land. So, you know, like I said earlier, it takes constant effort. I've been doing this longer than I care to admit out loud.
I just like to say we are women of much wisdom.
That's right.
That's how you look at it. But I'm like you, you know, even when I'm teaching communication skills or coaching a leader, I'm like, look, I'm telling you this for myself as well. And I, you know, yeah. I'll tell you, there's some days I do it really well and there's some days that I don't, but you know, instead of beating myself up, which, you know, some days you do that, you're just like, gosh, I could have said this so much better. Or I wish I could go back and take it back. I just try to spin it into a positive thing of, first of all, giving myself some grace with it, encouraging other people to do the same thing.
Yes.
And just like, what did you learn from that? And so, you know, you talk about that integration of learning into everyday work. And so what does that look like ideally? Because I try to do it, you know, I go to bed at night and I try to reflect on the day and how did a coaching session go? Or maybe how did a client conversation go, you know, did I say the appropriate things, you know, how do I, just kind of reflecting, but I would love to hear from your experience of integrating that learning into every day.
Yeah.
What does that ideally look like? How would you recommend to leaders of like, what do I, there's so many things to learn. There's so many things to do. Is this just one mm-hmm. more thing I have to add? Mm-hmm. How do we do it where it becomes more effortless than effort?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big question, right? Because I do understand, as you said, it's very challenging to get people to engage in any new process if it feels like, oh gosh, you're adding one more thing to my plate. Mm-hmm. But there absolutely are ways to do it effectively, successfully. And, you know, sometimes I will say it is one of those things that you might have to spend a little bit more time up front in order to truly have that pay dividends down the road. I know one of the favorite quotes I've heard recently, and this actually came from one of my colleagues, who I think it was one of her coaching clients who said it, but I have to borrow it because it was so great. He said that he tells his team when they say, you know, but I don't have time to give that a second read through, or I don't have time to, you know, think about how this is going to land on somebody else. He'll say, you don't have time to do it right the first time, but you have time to redo it. That doesn't make sense.
Right. It's like, listen to what you just communicated. Go yeah. back, take a minute, reflect.
Exactly. So a little bit of this does take some trust in the process, that although it may take a little bit of time, more time right now up front, if it's something that's new for you, that, like I said, it ultimately will pay dividends in time down the road. But so for leaders, what I really like to see, what we see certainly at HRD, you know, with our clients who do this versus our clients who don't, wow, the impact is very noticeable. So for example, if your people are participating in a leadership development opportunity, think about building in consistent ways to ask them about what they're learning. So, you know, if I know, for example, one of my clients found a way to just in her weekly team meetings, she's got two of her team members who are engaging in a leadership development series with us right now. And so she started, you know, just building in opportunities to say, hey, you know, are you learning anything this week that might help us navigate this particular challenge right now? So it's already a challenge that they're talking about in their team meeting, but just giving them an opportunity to bring in any new concepts or ideas that they've learned and leverage them right now in real time in this moment. So that's one great way. It's just wonderful. I see that happen. You know, giving people opportunities to grow and apply their learning through stretch assignments. What a beautiful way for a leader to be able to maybe, you know, potentially take something off your plate, allow somebody to apply things that they're now learning by giving them some kind of stretch assignment or growth assignment to put new skills to practice. Giving them opportunities to teach others, right? So, hey, if you're learning something that you're really excited about, share that with the rest of the team. This is such a win-win because, number one, the best way for somebody engaging in a learning opportunity to cement their learning is to have them teach someone else. That is one of the most powerful ways to cement your own learning, is to teach somebody else. And then, of course, now you are sharing more knowledge and more information with a larger group of people.
I agree with that. And, you know, I always say, when I teach, I learn.
Mm-hmm. And oh, that's, absolutely. You
know, that's, I mean, that's just such a great way to reinforce it. And, you know, that's a lot of the frustration, you know, that I see, you know, going, when you spend 6 months going through a leadership development program, taking a group of people through, and then it's not reinforced and it's not rewarded. And then it's almost this lost effort. And then it becomes something of like, did we just do this to, you know, we've mentioned this a couple times. Did we just do this to check a box to say that we, mm-hmm. you know, I'm air quoting this. We do leadership development. But what do we really do with that? You right. know, how do Absolutely. We get people to communicate what they've learned and share that? And for leaders, model it. Mm-hmm. You know, are they modeling these things? That's the best way we know if they're getting some of these things, and that's the best way to teach some of these things, is to, you know, be the model for what you want to see happen. You know, be the change you want to see in the world.
That's right. And it's well, getting... It's so true. And it's funny that I love that suggestion, because that made me think of another idea for how leaders can really try to help incorporate learning into everyday work. And that's, you know, be open to being challenged. And in fact, invite your employees to, you know, kind of challenge processes. Like, hey, what insights are you gaining in this learning and development opportunity that you're in that might help us find innovative ways to address some challenges and roadblocks and problems that we're already experiencing. So really inviting them to
talk
bring
about
that
it.
Knowledge, you know, and consistently. Yes. And the one other idea I do have to throw out, because you talked earlier about accountability, you know, just building in accountability for their learning at multiple levels. So into weekly one-on-ones, into team meetings, into quarterly and annual check-ins. So, you know, yes, the annual performance review, but that should be at a bare minimum, right? It should be happening really at many checkpoints.
It should be happening consistently. Throughout. And I am always a big fan of those one-on-one conversations that they should be happening on a regular basis. And, you know, I know my niece Hazel, I always ask her when I pick her up from school, which we did yesterday. I'm like, okay, what is one thing you learned today?
Yeah.
I always ask her that. And so, you know, there's not, I mean, of course she's 10, but I'm saying, you know, even asking, you know, in your team meetings or in your one-on-ones, okay, so what are some things you've learned this week? What are some things that went well? What are some things that you would do differently now that you learned how to do it the wrong way? You know what I mean? It's just, but it's constantly keeping that going, because I think there's so many times we're learning things and we're missing the opportunity to really use that learning going forward.
Yes.
It's like it just disappears because it's not in the forefront of our mind and we're not really being encouraged to talk about it.
Right. Well, and one of the things that I think we sometimes might not understand is that, you know, most of the time, I'm sure that there are caveats to what I'm about to say, but by and large, employees want to share what they're learning. They get excited about it. They're like, this is a great opportunity. But they might just need that gentle nudge or that invitation to do so.
They do. Just invite it in. And so that really leads me into my next question. And we've touched upon this a little bit in different aspects of what we've talked about. But how do you approach building learning and development programs that cater to many different communication styles and preferences? You know, those people that just love to come to training and talk and share. Yeah. And then the ones that you have that are very introverted, that try to hide and never have to say a word through the entire process. So how do you build that very inclusive program that, you know, it touches everybody and everybody is able to, talking about learning, everybody's able to take something away from it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great, and you know, it's funny. I mean, I think really for learning and development specialists, this is one of the most universal questions out there. I think that the maybe a 20,000 foot answer is just, you know, different ways to engage with the material. We really try to include opportunities for all different types of learners and communicators. So, you know, we engage in, for example, activities that a 5-minute solo writing. So, you know, think on your own about this, some, you know, whatever the prompt is. Reflection with, again, either solo or with other people, and then discussion with others, obviously reading, but we also try to include in our, obviously when I say our, this is at HRD, in our learning and development programs that we build, we also try to include lots of different types of resources as well. So not just readings, but also podcasts, articles, videos of interviews with experts, you know, TED Talks, things like that. So something to kind of touch upon not only different ways of engaging with the material, but different types of material as well. And then also like multiple options for completing, I guess what we'll call action. We usually call them action items. You might think of them as assignments, but you know, if I'm asking my clients, for example, one of the things we often do is I like to ask my clients to craft a leadership mission, a statement that essentially says, this is who I commit to being as a leader. And I afford them lots of leeway to get creative with what that includes, what it looks like. You know, it needs to feel like you, and it needs to be sustainable and something that you will use. So there's not one right way to do any of these things. So some of that too comes out in just my role as a facilitator. I'm just naturally pretty inclusive. I tend to get a pretty good beat on the people who want the opportunity to talk but need that invitation, the people who would really rather talk in small groups as opposed to in front of the room, you know, and again, build in opportunities to do lots of different things. So ultimately, it's about creating what is called a neuroscience enriched environments, which is just using multiple types of stimuli to try to communicate any particular lesson or message. The more types of stimuli we use, the more robust or congruent an image will be produced in our learner's brain. So in terms of not only the type of material, but also how they engage with it.
I love all of that because I do try to integrate. I'm like, okay, people have different learning styles. I was recently listening to another leadership podcast, and they had a gentleman on there by the name of Joe McCormick, and he has written a book called Quiet Works. And so he was talking about how, you know, there's like phases of like noise. Everybody is busy, and noise can be the enemy because we're always doing something. Mm-hmm. And he said, where we're really missing is the quiet, just to sit and to think about what we are going to communicate. Mm-hmm. And so he was teaching a communication skills class, and he gave the group a choice of what they could do for the next 10 minutes. He said, you can go off and you can think, because they were going to go into an activity. He's like, you can go away and think about what you want to come from this next activity, or what you're going to share, or what you're going to say. He said, or if you feel like you need to go check your phone and be, you know, busy, he said, you can go do that. So you have a choice. You can go sit and think for 10 minutes, or you can go get on your phones. And he said it was very interesting, these executives just looking at him like, I don't even know what to do with that choice you just gave me. Because if I just go sit and think, people are going to think I'm not working, you know. But his whole point was, you know, we have to kind of go away from something and think about it. And he was giving them time to process that before they went into the next thing. But he said it was just this struggle of, what do I do? You know, I mean, and it's funny because we're always really communicating. And that's why I started off with, but are we doing it really well? You know, we're pushing off messages. Sometimes maybe we just need to sit with that quiet mm-hmm. and think about what do we want to say and how do we want to say it? But, you know, if you say to somebody, I'm going to go sit and think about that for 10 minutes, I'll be back. People will be like, really? Right. But I think we would all be better served if we thought about more of how we're going to communicate something, especially when it's a higher stake conversation. It's absolutely. Like I need to process that. And I think even in those learning programs and sessions, it's giving permission for leaders to do that. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to automatically just have an answer out of the gate with something. Sometimes you might need to sit mm-hmm. and think about your audience, what you want to say, how you're going to say it. But I just feel like everybody feels like they need to be busy and doing something. And that ends up, at least for me, that's not the best version of me when I communicate something out. I haven't thought about it.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, for my, it's funny you say this. I actually talk about this in my book. For my clients who are those people, which is a lot of people nowadays, right? Who just feel like but I must stay busy. So my suggestion in those moments is I completely agree with your need, by the way, or your suggestion for the need to sometimes just sit back and think. But if you can't let yourself do that, write what you think you want to say, right? And maybe if it's an email to someone, for example, go ahead and write it, but don't put their email address in the recipient box yet so that you don't accidentally send it.
That's great advice.
You know, step away from it, even if it's for 90 seconds. I recommend 5 minutes, especially if it's something, you know, of value or importance. But just go do something else. You've got plenty of other things to do. We've established that, right? So go do something else for a minute. Then come back to this message and reread it, ideally out loud, because when we read something out loud, we are much more likely to read, number one, what we actually wrote as opposed to what we think we wrote. And number two, we're more likely to hear the tone of the message than if we just read it silently. So, you know, do that, and then that will help you think about the impact of your message. So that's a quick little, what do we call it? I guess a pro tip for those who say, no, I'm not interested in sitting silent, but I'd like my communication to still land better. You can be active. Just don't send it yet. Just don't send it.
Yes. And that's great advice on don't put the person's email in there, because I've had it where it did get sent. I'm like, what? You know, and you're just like, oh, goodness gracious. And then you're crawling back from that.
Yeah. No, that's right. There isn't. No. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, some people's trackpads are just really sensitive, or, you know, gosh, you just have a twitchy pointer finger and you hit click and you're going,
yeah. Or your computer thought you said send it, because, you know, it's always, technology's always listening. So what would be then, talking about advice, what would be your best piece of advice for the leaders listening to activate hope when it comes to being an impactful and effective communicator at every level?
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I love this question. And I love that you're including the hope piece in it, because I think that that is important, that there's always hope and for there, we can always hope that we get better. Right. And, mm-hmm. But of course, we've got to put the work in. I think I go back to what I said earlier about the single most important tool, which is leading with questions. If I could give, you know, anybody only one tool to become a more impactful, frankly, again, not just communicator, but also leader, I think leading with questions more often is my number one piece of advice.
I'm in agreement with you, and I'm going to start even doing that myself, because as you and I both know as coaches, we don't give answers. Mm-hmm. We just ask a lot of questions and help people find those answers. So I think as leaders, the best thing that we can do is not really tell people things all the time. And sometimes, you do have to tell things.
Sure.
But for the most part, you can really have a conversation, have a dialogue, ask questions, let people find that for themselves. Let them sit with that and think about it. And then your role is really to be there and support and help them get to wherever they need to be.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Beautifully said.
Thank you. Well, it has been, this has been a wonderful conversation with you, because you and I know when we met, just maybe less than a year ago, we had this instant connection of passions for the same thing. And, you know, I love that we've been able to share that, and I've been able to continue to learn from you. And so I just want to say to you, if our listeners out there want to stay connected with you too, just to maybe follow up on some things you talked about, or, you know, just your recommendation on resources, what is the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, great. Thank you for asking. I'll give you three. Certainly you can find me on LinkedIn, on my profile, Allie Atkison, last name A-T-K-I-S-O-N. I also have a website, allieatkison.com. And if you're interested in working with me in terms of, you know, learning and development, leadership development, you can find me at hrdleadership.com.
Well, again, I cannot thank you enough. And I really am. I will report back to you these nine digital communication mistakes. I am an overachiever, but I'm going to do what I tell the people that I lead. I'm going to, like, just pick your top three, and do something every day to learn how to do that better. So I encourage people to check out your book again, How's Your Computer Science Manner? The nine digital communication mistakes you're making that are holding you back. So a great read. And again, thank you so much, Allie, for sharing your expertise with us. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you soon.
Thank you so much, Hope. Likewise, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Now go activate your hope, and we look forward to seeing you next time.